We'll bring you our first audio from the just-completed Dayton Hamvention in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the RAIN Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. The 2012 Dayton Hamvention ended this past Sunday, May 20th. The weather was warm, dry, and sunny. HAP conducted some 30 ham radio roots interviews from the RAIN booth thanks to the portable sound screen that was set up for the first time. And 80 hours of high-quality audio was brought home from 4 forum rooms that were busy all weekend, 20 hours each. Perhaps the most successful hamvention for RAIN so far. One of the popular forums every year is the FCC Forum, which ran 90 minutes this year, longer than the last several. We'll be bringing you a handful of excerpts from that forum, starting with the first chunk of audio from the talk by FCC bureaucrat Bill Cross, W3TN.
My name is William Cross. I work in the mobility division of the FCC's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. The Wireless Telecommunications Bureau is one of the operating bureaus within the commission. We handle all of the wireless services. The mobility division is the office in the FCC responsible for oversight of the amateur service. On the air, I'm W3TN. With me is Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. Kurt is the Commission's Emergency and Continuity Manager. The best way to explain what the Emergency and Continuity Manager does is like this. How many of you seen an Aflac commercial on TV with two guys fishing in a boat? When things go wrong, the duck is there and it plugs the leaks. At the end of the commercial, you see a beak in the water and the duck makes like an Evinrude across the water. The duck is the emergency and continuity manager in that commercial. And that's basically what an emergency and continuity manager does. He plugs all the leaks and solves all the problems and gets the mission accomplished in real time. Kurt will be talking about emergency communications and some things going on in the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau that may be of interest to you. Before we get going, I want to offer a special thanks to the Hamvention Committee and the Dayton Amateur Radio Association for making an hour and a half available for Kurt and me to conduct this forum. A lot more time than we've had in the past. Kurt was instrumental in getting this for you. I think he wanted a lot more time so he could answer a lot more of your questions. And I'm really looking forward to hearing his answers. Every year at Dayton, something happens that's kind of unexpected. One year there was a fellow walking around with a backpack radio. He came up to me and he had a card in his hand and said, "I've just had this tested and it's been certified to put out 1,800 watts of power." Well, that's kind of interesting. 97.313 says the maximum power is 1,500 watts under any condition of modulation. So you think about it, what should I do? And in your learned discretion, you decide that what happens in Dayton stays in Dayton. Another year, last year actually, the chairman showed up. Now, people have been on me a long time about, wouldn't it be really nice to have the FCC's chairman come out here and talk at Dayton? How can we do that? I really didn't have any idea, but it turned out he was here, and what happened was he had been speaking at a convention in Dallas the day before. Very bad weather, flight was rerouted to Dayton, and he was basically stranded here. Well, we found out about this after the fact. Kurt and I got back to Washington, and here was an email, you know, on our email system, basically from his BlackBerry, said, "Either you guys around?" And this is kind of not good. This is like arriving at your desk and finding a general sitting on it waiting for you. So this year, I checked the weather before we left to make sure there weren't any thunderstorms around. A number of you have noticed that Laura Smith, the Enforcement Bureau's special counsel for amateur radio, is not here again this year. Laura was at HAMCOM in Dallas last year. She will be at the PacificCon convention in San Francisco in October. One of the complaints we have received over the years is that Hamvention seems to have a lock on the Commission's DC staff putting in appearances. We try to go to other places. Laura gets to go to one convention a year, and I do too. The Commission has to pay for our travel, and that's the reason that there's a limitation on where we can go. She has been busy, though. If you look at the FCC's old website, you will see that she has been very busy in what the commission has been doing in enforcement activities through the end of March. She mentioned to me she has 150 new cases this year so far. This past year has been a fairly quiet year on the rulemaking front. What I'm going to do is briefly mention a couple of topics where the rules were changed and how these seem to be working out. The first has to do with vanity call signs. Last year we changed some of the rules. The big changes were to end the ability of someone to cancel a deceased licensee's call sign in such a way that only they could get the call sign. And we also limited clubs to holding one vanity call sign on a going forward basis. Clubs that have a need for lots of call signs, like the ones that have D-Star systems, can get as many sequential call signs as they need. These are the 2x3s. The rule changes seem to have accomplished their purpose. Complaints about gaming the system by canceling a call sign after the 2-year period has ended and call sign hoarding by clubs have pretty much ended. Now, with spread spectrum communications, the commission eliminated the automatic power control requirement, and it limited stations transmitting spread spectrum to a maximum of 10 watts PEP. I haven't heard any complaints about what we did, so I assume the spread spectrum experimenters and communicators are happy, or at least sort of happy. This brings up the subject of the Ross mode of communications. You may have seen on DX Summit spots that refer to Ross on HF, you know, thanks for the Ross QSO or things like that. Ross came on the scene in 2009 or 2010. It was developed by Jose Alberto Nito Ross, a Spanish amateur. In the user guide that he put out, it says Ross is a digital communication software based on spread spectrum techniques. He uses the phrase spread spectrum 6 times in the user guide and about 20 times in Introduction to Ross, the spread spectrum, which is a PDF that also came with the description. The description includes these gems. The overall bandwidth required for frequency hopping is much wider than that required to transmit the same information using only one carrier frequency. Another place the guide says Ross modulation scheme can be thought of as a 2-step process, data modulation and frequency hopping modulation. And Ross uses a spread spectrum technique known as frequency hopping spread spectrum. Frequency hopping is a modulation technique that is unique to spread spectrum. It is not the same as frequency shifting, which is what you use in FSK communications. So there isn't any question in our mind that Ross is a spread spectrum emission. The rub is that in Part 97, spread spectrum emissions are allowed only above 222 megahertz. Why? Well, for exactly the reason Ross gives above. SS requires a much wider bandwidth than that required to transmit the same information using only one carrier frequency. So SS is fundamentally incompatible with a crowded band, like HF bands. Note that Section 97.307A requires that no amateur station transmission shall occupy more bandwidth than necessary for the information rate and emission type being transmitted in accordance with good amateur practice. SS is allowed above 222 megahertz because the spectrum up there is lightly occupied. In other words, a wide signal will not cause interference to other stations because there is enough room for everyone. The question I get is, are we allowed to use ROS? The answer is yes, you are allowed to use it above 222 megahertz. Not below 222 megahertz, which includes all the MF and HF bands.
You're listening to the first excerpt from the just-completed 2012 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum from Bill Cross, W3TN. Bill will continue his presentation in a moment. This is the RAIN Report. Available as a podcast 24/7 from therainreport.com.
Turning to another subject, in Docket 1072, the Commission added another exception that allows in limited circumstances, communications on behalf of an employer. The Commission decided that for an emergency preparedness or disaster readiness test or drill that is government-sponsored, a licensee may participate on behalf of an employer for the duration and scope of the test or drill, including operational testing immediately prior to the test or drill. For an emergency preparedness or disaster readiness event that is not government-sponsored, a licensee is limited to participate 1 hour per week, except that no more than twice in any calendar year, these tests may be conducted for a period not to exceed 72 hours. These time limits are the same limits we use for RACES tests and drills. RACES tests and drills don't seem to cause any problem, so using these limits seemed a logical choice. Questions about transmitting communications on behalf of an employer have pretty much disappeared. The rule seems to have satisfied almost everyone. As I have mentioned before, the Wireless Bureau is not the only bureau that affects the amateur service. ET docket number 1098 is from the Office of Engineering and Technology, and this decision concerned the five channels that make up your 60-meter band. The proposals to make the 60-meter band more useful to you, while making sure the primary users can also use the channels, were adopted. You may now use 100 watts PEP, CW, and some digital modulation schemes on the 60-meter channels. The decision also changed one of the channels. The channel at 5368 kilohertz was replaced with the channel at 5358.5 kilohertz. There are a couple of open proceedings I also want to mention. On May 4th, the managing director's office proposed to raise the fee for a vanity call sign from $14.20 to $15. The fee or whatever fee is adopted would also apply to applications to renew a vanity call sign after it becomes effective. We are required to charge a fee for vanity call signs by our statute. The fee is a regulatory fee. It recovers the cost of the Commission's enforcement activities, policy and rulemaking activities, user information services, and international activities. Each year, our managing director estimates what these costs will be, and in the case of vanity call signs, how many vanity call signs will be issued, and calculates the fee per vanity call sign. If adopted, the fee usually changes in late summer or early fall, 30 days after it's published in the Federal Register. Now, our Office of Engineering and Technology has an open proceeding to address the Court of Appeals remand of the rules that apply to broadband over power line. I haven't heard of any action of that or anything pending. I get the impression that this is not their top priority. The last open proceeding is simply known as the study, or docket 1291. It is the study that Congress required us to do as part of Public Law 112-96. This is the law that extended the reduction in the Social Security taxes through 2012. The study concerns the uses and capabilities of amateur service communications in emergencies and disaster relief. The comment period closed last Thursday. When I checked the electronic comment filing system Tuesday, 136 comments had been filed. Trust me, I have not read them yet. That starts next week. On April 2nd, we released a public notice requesting comment on issues relating to the importance of emergency amateur radio service communications and on impediments to enhanced amateur radio communications. We posed specific questions in the public notice to provide structure for the comments. The questions generally concern, first, the importance of emergency amateur radio communications as it relates to disasters, severe weather, and other threats to lives and property, and second, impediments to enhanced amateur communications and recommendations regarding the removal of such impediments. One thing that's important to keep in mind here is that the statute and what Congress asked us to do was to make recommendations. This is not a rulemaking proceeding. there are not rule changes proposed, and I doubt that from the proceeding will be coming any rule changes as such. That has to go through somewhat of a different process than preparing a report to Congress. The main part of the question is directed to private land use restrictions, such as those despicable CC&Rs that some of you seem to discover after you bought your property, and that apply to your ground-mounted vertical or dipole you thought you were going to be able to hide in the trees. There are a number of sub-questions under each topic, and I'm not going to bore you with the details, as most of you have read the public notice. The report to Congress is due mid-August, so you know what I'm going to be working on this summer. On the petition part of the rulemaking area, you may have noticed that the Commission's circulation agenda has an amateur-related item on it. An NPRM, is a notice of proposed rulemaking, is circulating among the commissioner's offices that it addresses two petitions for rulemaking, one from the ARRL that requests allow amateur stations to transmit certain additional emission types, and one from the Anchorage Volunteer Examiner Coordinator that requests we grant examination credit for expired operator licenses instead of requiring former licensees to retest. The ARRL petition addresses a situation that has occurred as a result of some of your brethren buying and putting on the air Motorola's Moto Turbo repeater system. This system is a narrowband UHF system that uses multiple time slot, time division multiple access repeaters, and single slot TDMA handheld digital transceivers, principally in the 420 to 450 megahertz band. The Commission needs to revise Section 97.3 to include an additional emission type in the definition of a phone emission, and to revise another Section 97.307 so these systems can be operated within the rules. On retesting, under the current rules, examination credit is not given for an amateur operator license that has expired and is beyond the grace period for renewal. Anchorage VEC argues that it is unfair that after the grace period has ended, a former licensee loses all credit for any exams he or she passed and must start all over if they want to continue their amateur radio activities. It notes that licensees who renew their licenses are not required to sit for re-examination regardless of how long ago they were first licensed. And it argues that the passage of time does not invalidate the knowledge of a person with an expired license any more than it does the knowledge of a person who renewed their license. We also have a petition concerning antennas and CC&Rs. One is from a fellow in Arizona. He argues that the PRB1 decision violates the 14th Amendment of the Constitution in that it treats similarly situated groups of people differently. Another petition requests that we amend the rules to specify a nationwide emergency radio frequency in the 2-meter band for use by all amateur radio operators. And our friend in Texas, Glenn Zook, is back for a third try at getting us to change the station identification rules. He requests we change this rule to provide that if an amateur station transmits its call sign during its first transmission, the call sign need not be transmitted at the end of the communications if the total communications is less than 3 minutes. That brings you up to date on what's going on kind of on the administrative side of amateur radio in Washington, and how some of the rule changes adopted in the past have affected you and seem to be affecting you.
That concludes our first excerpt from the Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum, held May 19th, 2012. More from Bill Cross, W3TN, next week. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2012 Rain, all rights reserved. For Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, this is Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.